I attended like a couple different community colleges because I was homeschooled growing up. And when I finally made the leap to a four-year college, I was really kind of at sea. I came in with a lot of credits from having gone to a lot of different community colleges. And so basically came in as like an almost junior, and everyone was like, it's time for you to declare your major and like know who you are and what you want to do with your life. And at the same time kind of hit a crisis of I can no longer ignore what my gender identity is. And those things kind of meshed together into this, like, I have to decide who I am right now and also declare a major. And those two things are impossible.
Emmett told me about the confluence of his career identity and his gender identity, a workplace that helped him figure himself out, and a mentor whose path mirrored his own. Emmett also mentions Gamergate, which, if you haven't heard of it, refers to a 2014 harassment campaign that targeted certain female video game developers and media critics. It doesn't figure heavily in his story, but I just don't want anyone to be confused, you know? I'm Sophie Kaner, and this is Edges.
Fortunately, at the same time, so my best friend Simone had started working for this kind of experimental studio on my college campus called the Digital Future Lab, which was, it was a lot of different things. It started out as a student-run publishing platform. It was a blog focused on like technology and intersections of tech and social justice. A lot of like feminist video game reviews and that sort of thing. And the founder was Jason of this space. And so Simone had been telling me like, oh, my boss is really cool at this job I'm working at as an editor. You should come in and meet them and see the space. And like, I knew that they said their boss was cool, but like there's a spectrum of like cool boss to the actual person that I encountered. Which was, I came in and was just kind of hanging out. It was a student, you know, workplace. It was very casual, and we were just kind of sitting around. And then Jason, like, busts out of their office, like, steaming furious, and starts laying into, like, game companies that will not take responsibility for the communities they have created and the ways that they victimize women and the fact that they're now trying to pretend that they're intentionally building, like, better communities when they can't even acknowledge that they have profited off of creating these violent spaces for years, and they've built that into their model, and they encourage this behavior, and, like, they won't even admit it, and, like, all of this at, like, not an inside voice.
Wait, so this was just apropos of nothing?
Apropos
just,
of nothing.
First, just started with this.
Everyone in the room is kind of like, yeah?
Yo, you're right, but we weren't
hell
prepared.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And this was, I mean, this was pre-Gamergate, or sort of in the morass of time, pre-eruption of Gamergate.
Okay.
So this was, I'm very glad, a conversation that me and my peers in that space started having, like, in advance of that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were just, you know, livid. And then sort of, you know, shook it off and were like, hi, I'm Jason. Who are you? Why am I yelling at you? And I just came away with this sort of, like, vision of this angry queer angel.
Wow. Sort
of dominating this space.
Avenging angel.
Yeah, it was very
cool.
It was very exciting and a little terrifying.
Yes.
But that energy to encounter in an academic space was something that I had not seen before. There are lots of very radical, angry professors, but I was in the spaces that I had been in was dealing with, like, taking very 101 level what are queer people classes that were very, very focused on, like, can we explain to the maximum number of presumed straight cis students what queer people are and let them work out all their negative feelings and maybe they'll learn something positive by the end. That was kind of the space that I was in. And so to have someone walk in and just be like, I'm fucking mad about all the things that you're mad about, but don't know you're allowed to be mad about yet.
Yeah.
And someone who's obviously older, they came from a long time in the games industry and tech before moving into this this academic role as the founder of the studio. A little bit more about the studio. It started out, like I said, as a publishing platform, and I was originally hired a couple months later as an editor.
Okay.
And then started doing some experimental work with the CSS department, the computer science dudes who were working on some teaching games that you could use in programming classes to, like, you would take away all of the elements but one, and then have the students, like, rebuild the game around it. Mm. And they would get to, like, stick in, you know, art assets and stuff, and so, like, really see the game come to life. I still think it was a really rad program. I got sort of pulled into that as somebody who was working on the design side of game mechanics. And while I was getting into that space, as somebody who, like, had, like, someone assigned female at birth, never really felt welcome in tech spaces and, like, programming or anything like that, mm-hmm. kind of getting into that space, the lab also started to shift into, like, we have a lot of people here who want to make games because it's a bunch of nerds and, like, who
sure.
were attracted to this space as, like, a gaming and tech space.
Yeah.
But most of whom have not historically felt welcomed and maybe didn't ever get to take programming classes in high school or just aren't gonna be welcomed in traditional gaming schools and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so out of that, the publishing wing continued for a while, but eventually was folded away and it became a game studio and research lab. So when I started there, I was tentatively, I had come out as genderqueer in theory at about age 16 because I had a friend on, LiveJournal who was out as genderqueer and going through sort of the early stages of discovering that. And I just sort of followed a few steps behind them going like, oh yeah. Oh no. Oh yeah. Me too. Oh shit.
What were some things at that time that made you connect with that identity?
It was a lot of things about gender as sort of a performance. I remember, I wish that I still was in contact with this person because we had a huge similarity in terms of our upbringing, in terms of being people who were very creative about gender and very attracted to androgyny and very into, like, playing with appearance and who had at various times, like, pushed ourselves as hard as we could into sort of a gender fluid space. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, watching them figure out that they didn't need to use the same pronouns anymore, or, like, they could change their name, or they could stop wearing bras, or, like, they could, you know, draw on a mustache. For pretty much, like, as long as I can remember, I was a very, like, gender creative person, but I always, I was also a theater kid, and I was a huge hammy performing arts kid, so, like, it all kind of rolled in my mind into, like, oh, I love being on stage, and I love playing with my appearance.
Yeah.
And I think meeting that person on LJ was the first time that it occurred to me that that was something a little more concrete and a little more permanent, maybe, than just wanting to play with stuff. Not that being a theater person isn't a permanent, long-term, lasting, and valid identity. Most of the theater people I know are theater for life. But yeah, I think it had never really clicked for me that there was a difference in the way I was experiencing those things than some of my friends for whom they were also theater kids, but maybe weren't as deeply emotionally invested in being read as male on stage or being read as androgynous on stage. Those guys, like, way back, I can remember wanting to play sort of whatever gendered part appealed to me at the time. And
yeah.
And just sort of butting up against a wall of like, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
So when I was about 20, I had been that person for a long time, and I had sort of played with the idea that that was a more permanent identity, but it had always felt out of reach to me to, I don't know, like, take any step beyond that. Like, I had never considered using different pronouns for myself, and I'd never considered, like, changing my name or really asking anything out of the people around me in beyond, like, recognize that I said I was genderqueer one time when I was 16. Like, it was something that I allowed myself to kind of broach the subject of. I think I posted about on Facebook once, like, I'm genderqueer. You don't know what that means, and neither do I. Okay, bye. You don't need to change anything about anything.
How was that received?
It was generally received well. And I think it was not necessarily with a deep understanding of what that meant. I think probably a lot of people sort of internalized it as feminist, or like, I was out as a lesbian at the time, and I think it just kind of rolled into that, like, I was butch and yada yada. My closest friends were always kind of on it, but broadly it just sort of, like, there was always, I think, an aura around me of like, they're weird. Like, and that was just kind of part of the whole spiel, like, the whole dramatic theater kid, you know, thing.
I love something that you said about asking something of other people around you, because I think that, I don't know that I've ever heard it expressed that way, but that is so true, like, as an actually an aspect of gender, is it does have to do with what you need from other people. Like, other people need to participate in your gender, actually. Like, it's
yes,
even though it is your identity, it has to do with the way other people respond to you. And when you're cis, people just treat you in that way automatically, and it's not a concern. But, like, that is the thing about being trans, isn't it, that you, like, need other people to make a change in their behavior. That's actually important.
Yeah. Audience participation.
Yeah. That is, I just think that's a very wise way of putting it. So I really like that.
It's like, what kind of space are you letting me be in your life? Kind of. And I got there immediately with some folks and never with others. Which I think is also very true of being trans in general, is like, some people are immediately like, oh yeah, whatever. Like, What space do you want to be in? I've got it. Like, I've got every space. Who gives a shit? And then some people are like, no, I really only have room for you as one thing, and nothing else is going to work. And I was still very much navigating that at that age. Like, when I met new people, me being trans was never a part of that dynamic. It was only with, like, very long-term close friends who had, like, witnessed me at some point, like, bringing something up on LiveJournal, probably, maybe Facebook. And I was out as queer. I'd been out as queer for a really long time, actually, because my family was theoretically very chill with queer people, but not with trans people.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, one of my aunts is gay. There were queer people in the family. And there were always, like, there were microaggressions and stuff like that. It wasn't perfect, but, like, I came out when I was 12 as bi, and that was fine. That was really chill. But me coming out as trans took another 8 or 9 years.
But did you say there was a point in time where you were identifying as a lesbian?
Yeah. And I think that lasted pretty much until I came out as trans, and I still, like, feel a lot of connection to lesbian communities like that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of complicated feelings about gender. Like, I now identify as a trans man for convenience, largely, but have always identified as agender, because there is a part of me that still feels very performative about it all and is like... Yeah. Anyway, I could. That's a whole rabbit hole unto itself. But Yeah, I was very much hitting a point where I had pushed all of that aside, and not even necessarily pushed it aside, but like I was just not allowing it to interfere with my day-to-day life. It was like, okay. I remember like a year or so before that, going out to a gay bar wearing a binder and like having a whole night where like that was definitely part of the experience and very important to me. And I every so often would bind like for dressing up with friends, and that was deeply important to me for reasons that I wouldn't examine. But it wasn't like I'm gonna come to school and be out, and I'm not gonna come to school and like with using a different name or different pronouns or different haircut or anything like that.
Right.
And I was kind of at the same time cultivating like an angry lesbian vibe in a lot of my classes, which led me to kind of an interesting burnout right around the time I started working at the lab, where I was really sick of being the angry queer person who would call stuff out and get into fights in class. And like the writer in me always wanted to like be the most correct. And yet like I was so closed off about this other aspect of myself. And I really did hit this crisis of like, I now have to declare a major, and that's going to be who I am when I graduate. Right. And who is that person, and what do I actually want? And long story short, I dropped out of college rather than declare a major.
Gosh. A power move.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, actually. And I was just in this like emotional morass of like, this clearly means more than I've ever allowed it to mean. And I'm going to hit a point where I have to face that. And at the same time, I think I was suddenly getting this very positive like example of what life could be in the form of Jason, who was always out as queer. And who like that same year, I believe, was the year that it was either that year or the next year that gay marriage was legalized in Washington State. And they and their husband got married, and I came to the wedding, and like seeing them in this like amazing long-term relationship, and also them as this industry professional and director of my lab, and like somebody who embodied all of this stuff that I think subconsciously I thought like, you can't be you and also be that. Like you're gonna come to a crossroads, and you're gonna pick whether you want to be a sad, like a broken queer person, or a successful like person with a life. And then all of a sudden, like, here comes along like this person who is viciously both, like emphatically, like vibrantly everything all at once. And who, you know, would speak very frankly about the challenges of living that kind of embodiment, and challenges that they had faced in their career. And yet, like, it was clearly all worth it, and it was clearly not fucking stopping them from being their exact self. And so after I dropped out of college, I stayed working at the lab, which, thank goodness for that, because that year I finally came out first to my coworkers, mostly, who were mostly my friends at that point, and to Jason, and had like, I think, the pretty singular experience of walking into their office and being like, can I talk to you about something that you already know, but that I need to make real. I'm trans, I'm genderqueer, I'm agender. And then being like, yeah, me too. And just kind of being like, oh, well, that's cool.
That's so the
raddest.
Cool.
That's the raddest shit ever. How does this happen?
So you hadn't known that about them?
I think it wasn't out of the blue. I think that like they had described their gender in a much more expansive way than typical cis folks, and sort of talked about like, you know, having a sense of gender performance in a way that definitely resonated with me. So it was not like a shocker. Mm. But it was, I think it was one of the first times that was totally clear to me, that it was like, this is not like, oh, you're gender expansive and I'm trans. It was like, no, we're both there. It's not this, I don't know how to express it, but like, it's not just that like you play around with this and I'm going to go all the way. It's like, this is serious and real for both of us. This is deeply held. This is like, this is an internal sense of self, you know? And then I came out to my family a little bit after that, and that was a much rockier coming out. And I don't know, I would have gotten through it, but I don't know in what way I would have gotten through it without having the lab and my best friends who worked there and Jason as sort of the rock through that period, mm-hmm. because I had a queer adult in my life who I could go into their office and just be like, everything sucks. And I had a terrible Christmas at home, or like, I came out at Thanksgiving like everyone does and it's the worst. Why do we do it? It's always bad. And I had this wretched time and I'm not speaking to my brother and like all this stuff, and be able to have a grown ass real queer adult, you know, look me in the eye and be like, yeah, that sucks. I know a hell of a lot of people who have been through this. You're gonna be okay. But also, boy, that sucks. Yeah. Like, and be like, the amount of tears that I soaked into their couch cushions in their office over the next 4 years that we worked together could probably like fill an ocean. but also the amount of just like really good deep talks. And it's worth mentioning, like, I grew up in a small town, and it was a very liberal small town, but nonetheless, like, small town is like 98% white, very like stratified wealth, like a lot of unexamined prejudices and kind of a general vibe of like, we're cool with the thought of queer people, but we haven't thought really hard about the execution and like the reality. Everything was all fine and good, and like, I've got a gay cousin probably who I love, but oh my god, this one is dating my daughter and I'm suddenly very upset.
Right.
Like, that was kind of the vibe.
Yeah.
The reality of me running around as a visibly queer youth who was fucking around with gender was often much less palatable to the people in that in that setting.
Yeah.
And the number of queer adults was very, very few. And was mostly relegated to like people that, you know, the parents were a little suspicious of and wouldn't let near their kids because, of course, they had weird ideas about, like, can't let queer adults near children. You know, that kind of thing that, like, totally crushes your ability to make an intergenerational connection and learn that, like, you can grow up and exist as an adult.
Yeah.
And find a different community. And that you're not just relegated to become someone's weird gay cousin who lives in the city. and so coming out of that, I really had met very few grown-up queer people, let alone someone with this sort of long perspective of having, you know, grown up. Oh, no, math. Uh-oh.
You're kryptonite.
Uh-oh, comes from me again. Having grown up in the 70s and 80s, I think is the correct decades, and survived the AIDS crisis. And that's something that I feel like I feel very, very, very lucky to have had, because as a community, like, we lost so many elders.
Yes.
And we lost so much connection to our own movements and the our communities and our tactics and our music and our self-expression and like everything. And not only that, but like the sense of continuity. I see there's like, there's so much strife, like inner community strife in the queer community now. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that it was a bunch of kids on the internet in a lot of circles, just sort of brawling it out to figure out what we were going to do next. And I don't want to say like that that's bad, because obviously like that's where a lot of folks have found community at all. And that was, it was certainly like vital to my life coming
but
out.
But some of the discourse is bad.
But some of the discourse.
Some of it is just bad.
It's, some of it's not good. And it's so, you know, like we have to all use the exact same words and they have to be the new words that are correct. Like we all have to refer to ourselves the same way. We have to have this like unity of thought and knowing, you know, having a very close friend and mentor who used a different set of terminology because they grew up like 30 years earlier.
Right.
And yet who clearly like saw the connections between, you know, folks who would be called drag kings and queens and trans people, like who didn't have a problem holding all of those people in one space. Mm-hmm. Like, I think as a young queer community, we have a tendency to just sort of throw out anything that doesn't match like where we're at now, and to not make connections to our history and our elders because they use different words and like, you know, they were living in a different time. Yeah. And it was so valuable to me to be able to make that continuity between me now and folks fighting for their rights, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah. And it gives you a lot of perspective on like how much easier we have it now, you know, like we all, you know, obviously people's mileage varies, but like I feel like we all complain a lot given how much harder it was 30 years ago.
Yeah. And that was always a really good perspective to have too, was like, I would talk about like infighting in the community and they would just sort of be like, yeah, like, yeah, you know, we had these conversations.
Mm.
Remember that people brawled about that too, and whatever, it didn't ruin the community then either. Like,
yeah,
it'll be okay. Like, you don't all need to agree with each other. You don't all even need to like each other.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to stand in solidarity when the time is right and like have some fucking perspective on the fact that millions of us died like within a few generations. Like, and I am just so, I'm so profoundly grateful for the perspective and wisdom and the anger and the heart and the grief that they were willing to share with me through that time. Because it really completely shaped my perspective on our history. Yeah, they're just the best. And like, I've known them for such a long time now. And like in many ways, like we both came out together. Like they were not using they them pronouns when we first met.
Really?
And so we both came into that space.
Wow.
And I experimented with different pronouns. They experimented with a bunch of different pronouns.
Oh my gosh.
The lab eventually, you know, adopted like pronoun circles at the beginning of every meeting.
Oh, cute.
And people, a lot of people came out during that process. Like a lot of people either tried stuff or like, you know, one person would come out and someone else would be like, in solidarity, I would also like to use they, them pronouns for a while. And like they had... I think this was a little bit after my time, but I know they tried experiments where like everybody use a different pronoun for the day, or like every person is referred to as they, them for today.
That's interesting.
And just sort of try it out, like see how this feels for you. And so, being able to be a part of their vulnerability and the vulnerability that they shared in that. And then it just made it such a safe space for me to fuck around, like, which is what I really needed to do, especially as someone who's still very like whatever about gender when it comes down to the like the deep depths of my soul. I'm like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
I think we'd all be better off if we had more space to fuck around.
Yeah. Like, I could come into the lab wearing whatever. I could come into it, like, being like, I'm gonna be really, really butch for a while. Or, like, I'm gonna, you know, I for the first time got to have a space where when I met someone for the first time, I was, you know, a respected senior intern of this space and also a dude. And, like, that was just that. Like, ground level. Like, that was the only way it was gonna be. And so it became a space where I could play with, like, how do I want to meet someone? How do I want my first interaction with someone to go? Like, how do I want to be seen in a senior position? I don't know. All this stuff that is just weirdly, like, more connected than I think we think it is in terms of, like, what is my job and what is my gender and what is my position in society and who are we to each other?
Yeah.
I know. It's just a big mess. It's a big, hot mess.
No, I think it's very interesting how you connect those things. I think that is true. Yeah. And it's just because, again, it's about, like, what you're asking of other people, you know, like, how ought they see you and treat you, which is very messy and complicated. So, now, obviously, you no longer work there, but what is your relationship like with Jason now?
So Jason is still the person I will text if I'm going through a life crisis and just sort of be like, yep, it's me. It's me again. Probably the same one. But, like, I had new thoughts on my life crisis. Like, I last year was the first year I had had a day job and was also dealing with, like, major sort of creative strife for myself because I was running into, like, now I have a full-time job and how much is art work and how much is it play? Blah, blah, blah. Very, like, normal writer navel-gazing stuff. But yeah. and they were the person I called to be like, am I a sellout? Like, because I got a job and I love having health insurance and I think I love it more than being a starving artist. Like,
I think I love not dying.
Yeah. Am I not an activist anymore? And having them being like, no, like, I did this too. Like, it's really nice to have a job.
Yes.
And have health insurance. Yes. And, like, be able to buy yourself and other people food and things to live.
It is nice.
It's super great. I love it. I just had lunch with them day before yesterday, and just topped right back into it with, like, here's what's going on in my life. Here's what I'm insecure about right now. And they dispensed some just sparkling wisdom. And I was like, how do you do this? But I think a big part of that is the fact that, like, they not only became a mentor to me, but they became a friend. Like, they became truly one of my best friends. And just a person who, like, apropos of nothing, I could show up and be like, I'm having a shitty day because I don't know what it means for me to have a family anymore. Like, I came out and I, in the process, like, don't really have a mom now. Like, I don't have a relationship with my mother, and I don't speak to two of my siblings with whom I was very, very close growing up, and all this stuff was really, really hard, and yet they made it very easy to talk about and to kind of try to shoulder and to acknowledge as part of my life. One of the things that they and the assistant director of the lab, Ina, who is also an amazing person, instituted was this sense in the lab of, like, who you are doesn't ever turn off. Like, you don't come to work and get to forget that something horrible happened today. Like, I was working at the lab when the shooting in Orlando happened, and we shut down. Like, no one, like, we were able to come together and acknowledge, like, we can't fucking do this today. Like, we're in bone deep mourning right now, and we just have to acknowledge that that's where we're at. Like, we're not gonna come in and be stoic and shrug this off and try to be like cool assimilationist gays who just come to work after this and make video games or whatever. We're gonna have a sit down and be like, this fucking sucks, everything sucks, like, we're all traumatized and thinking about our siblings across the country, and having that normalized is something that it's been jarring to go everywhere else, frankly.
Yeah,
but
sure,
because not a lot of places are like that, but it's also right. Something that I have taken with me and is something that I will never stop trying to give to other people, because it was such a gift.
Yes.
It was such a huge gift to never have to compromise between I'm coming in to work and did we all fucking see the news?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's hard to work a day job now where like that's not gonna fly.
Yeah. But what a magical thing.
Yeah. And I think it has had a tremendous lasting impact on everyone in that space. And, yeah. You know, it was a very formative experience for a lot of people, not only because it was a great, like, skill learning place, but because we got to have, like, a whole bunch of, you know, like, white straight cis dudes from the computer science department come in and learn with all of us and, like, learn about their insecurities and their struggles as well and, like, learn about all the kinds of shit that could be going on in a person's life and like teach empathy by offering empathy. And I don't know, just create this space where anybody was allowed to be having a really bad day or a really good day. And like accomplishments were celebrated. I don't know. It was a really, really, really special place. And Jason was absolutely like fundamental to making that space, because they came in with that like chaos energy of like, I don't give a fuck that there are strange students sitting in my lab right now. I'm pissed off about the gaming industry and the way it treats women, and I'm gonna scream about it in the middle of the lab right now.
Yeah, something about someone being so much themselves that they make it possible for you to be yourself.
Yes, like Jason, I think it's fair to say, as a person who knows how to fucking take up space when it's important, but then also would be like, and here is your space, get in it, stand like stand out, like wave your colors, what are your colors, I want to see them, wave them around, like reveal your true self, like
that's amazing.
Yeah, just an amazing.
And I think it's really cool that you have the desire to be that in some way for other people.
Yeah, and it's been hard because, like, I'm a much more reserved person. I think Jason and I have a lot in common, but I'm a much more introverted isn't even the word. Mild mannered, maybe. And I think, you know, a big thing that I still feel is part of their influence on me is as I go out into the world, I think about what an impact their presence in the world makes and what kinds of impacts I can't make because I'm not willing to push and make space that other people can step into all the time. And how much I want to grow into that space and develop, you know, the clout to make those spaces. Because a big part of what they did was, like, they came from industry and were able to step straight into a director role and be like, this is it. Like, we are going to make a game studio for diverse students. And I'm going to yell about feminism in the middle of it, and no one can stop it. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it was amazing.
And it was amazing. And just to sort of have the force of personality to sustain that and be willing to, you know, embrace the social awkwardness and just sort of push into that space and say, no, fuck it. Like, this is important. This matters. And it's very, very hard for a confused genderqueer student who doesn't want to be the person who stands up and yells anymore to make a space, like, and to demand that the rules of the space are that everyone belongs here. Like, there were lots and lots of things that we couldn't do that were hard and that required an intense amount of personal sacrifice and effort to do. I know that running the lab was like a more than full-time job for them.
Sure.
It has been for over 5 years now. And not only that, but like a deeply emotionally invested one. I mean, they basically played counselor to me personally. I don't know how many other people cried on that couch, but I'm assuming a lot. And yeah, just the willingness to take that on and be willing to fight for it, I think is something that I associate with, like, also that generation of queer history. Because that was, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but I've gotten the sense that, like, that was some of what they came into that environment knowing was, like, sometimes if you don't fucking scream about something, no one will listen to you. Yeah. And sometimes if you are not willing to be disruptive and obnoxious and loudmouthed and just a hurricane of a person in a space, nothing will get done, and the right people will say, oh, we should do that, and wouldn't it be nice to have a space for diverse students to diverse around, but never do anything
right
more than say that. Like, this was the same campus where it took a sustained, like, two-year, like, brawl by students to get them to open a diversity center of any sort. And yet, you know, very liberal school, and a lot of very cool professors and a lot of people who were really invested in doing the right thing, but, like, still a big institution that didn't always move very quickly or at all. And the amount of just bullheaded fortitude that it takes to walk into that space and be like, now I'm going to do it. And just do it.
Yeah.
And be like, anyone who's mad about this can be mad about it. And they can die mad about it. Because in the meantime, it's going to get done.
Yeah.
And the rewards of that are so much. So, I don't know. I think all the time about how can I be more of that kind of a person in my own much quieter way. When I was talking to them a couple days ago, I was in a kind of a weird place with some, I was having some interpersonal drama where I just felt like folks in my life weren't giving me space to be, like, a little uncertain about gender stuff. Basically, like, you know, I've been out now as trans for, like, 5 years and, like, have been out as a dude specifically and, like, not really feeling like people are giving me space to be non-binary and to still just be like, I really still kind of don't care about this. Yeah. I know I did all this stuff and, like, came out and took hormones and whatever, but I still kind of don't care. Like, feeling like people are a little bit like, didn't you do that? Aren't you done? And they were like, well, you know, if you think about it, of all of the people in your cohort and all of the folks that you worked with, you had the most sort of profound transformation as a person during that time, not just in terms of your gender identity, but in terms of, like, who you became. Like, you are a completely different person and you're still becoming a completely different person.
Right.
And that's not necessarily something that other folks are going to understand or relate to, but, like, think about that and think about how much you've changed and, like, what that energy, and it really did just sort of click into place for me of, like, oh yeah, that's true.
next time on Edges.
I barely see my grandma. I barely see my dad. We're gonna go. I'm taking you out of this hot hell city and we're going to Vermont. You know, it was August. It was like soup in New York City where like your skin is damp 100% of the time.
And everything is filthy.
Yeah. And it never starts off bad, but like by August, everyone is at their breaking point. So Vermont. Going to Vermont. And I took him to my grandma's house, which is in this like very small town in Vermont. And it's a place that I should preface this with later that year, my grandmother died. So that's why I'm so sad. And there was a lot of conversation about what would happen to this house.
If you want to support Edge's podcast, the best ways to do that are to leave a rating or review on your podcast app or follow at Edge's Podcast on Twitter. If you tweet at the show, I might read your tweet in the credits. You can also pledge to the show's Patreon by going to patreon.com/edgespodcast. That's patreon.com/edgespodcast. For $2 per month, you'll receive a thank you in the show notes of each episode. For $4, you'll receive episodes 3 days early. For $7, you'll access bonus material that I cut from the episode. And for $10, you'll hear me thank you by name in these closing credits. Please consider supporting the show in whatever way you can, as I literally cannot do it without you. Thank you so much to my $10 Patreon supporters: Angel Acevedo, Benjamin Redman, Caroline Seidman, Colby Rowan, Garrett M., Jack, Kirsten Griffith, Red L., and Reese. You really are the ones making it happen. On Twitter, Henry Mars, the big NB, at Marstonland, says, "This last Edges podcast episode is uplifting as hell! I am also non-binary, and I'm just grinning and happy as shit for Jade." A million heart emojis. Amy, at Amethyst Art, says, "Oh, I'm listening to episode 4 of Edges podcast, and now I'm gonna cry. Relating very, very much to Jade's gender identity and just so happy for them." Crying emoji. "Please go listen to this show. It's so wonderful." Thanks, Henry and Amy. I think it's so cool that you relate so much to Jade, and I love that their story really resonated with you. In this week's bonus track, Emmett talks about changing gender on stage and the adventures of questionable legality that Jason took him on. The Edges logo is by Alice Chung, and original music is by Ryan Vibert. Edges Podcast is created and produced by me, Sophie Kaner.